Case number 20-3216, EACA versus William Barr. Arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Ms. Nagar, you may proceed for the petitioner.
Thank you. May it please the court. Rachel Nagar for the petitioner. I've reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Right.
The question in this case is whether the Board of Immigration Appeals erred when it denied a motion to reopen removal proceeding for a 13-year-old child. The petitioner child in this case missed her court date in Tennessee after her mother moved her family to New York and her mother gave birth just 10 days prior to the petitioner's hearing. Although there was no evidence that there was anyone else who could bring the petitioner to court, the Board of Immigration Appeals wrongly found that this did not constitute exceptional circumstances. The board erred in three ways when it denied the petitioner's motion to reopen. First, the board violated the plain language of the statute when it found that the petitioner's mother's recovery from childbirth did not in itself constitute an exceptional circumstance. Second, the board erred in requiring the petitioner to demonstrate prima facie eligibility for relief when this is not a requirement to rescind in absentia removal order. Third, the board abused its discretion by ignoring important factors when it assessed the totality of the circumstances. This court should find that the circumstances presented here were exceptional and that the proceedings should be reopened. At a minimum, this case should be remanded for the board to correct its errors and adequately consider all of the relevant factors in their totality. I'd like to first address the error in-
Counsel, would it be more prudent to do the remand? Like you said, it's the alternative is we could actually rule on it, or we could reverse and remand. Is it more prudent to remand?
No, I believe that there's no dispute as to the facts of this case. And I think the facts do establish that she demonstrated exceptional circumstances. The statute explicitly says that the serious illness of a parent is an example of an exceptional circumstance. And here her mother was recovering from just having given birth.
Serious illness. I mean, she knew, you know, if you have a serious illness, you may not know it until 2 days before you contract it. She knew she was pregnant months and months before and knew her due date was apparently around the time of this hearing. Why did she wait so many months before asking for, say, a change of venue or a continuance?
Yes, her mother made efforts prior to the court date to secure counsel and to change venue. Those efforts were unsuccessful. The statute doesn't require that the illness be sudden. It merely says that if a petitioner fails to appear due to exceptional circumstances, the board may reopen their case. And in this case, her failure to appear was due to the serious illness of her mother. Her mother was recovering from childbirth and couldn't take her across the country to attend court. The board has previously held in an unpublished decision that recovery from childbirth is a serious illness that excuses an individual's failure to appear. Even more so here, it wasn't the petitioner that was recovering from childbirth, it was her mother. And because she was a minor, and her was dependent on her mother to get her to court, this is an exceptional circumstance that prevented her from appearing. The board also erred in requiring her
going back to Judge Griffin's question, can we decide that it was an exceptional circumstance, or do we need to say that we think, given the evidence, that the board abused its discretion and then remand to the board to make a determination under proper consideration of factors?
This court can find that she demonstrated exceptional circumstances. The statute's very clear that a serious illness of a parent that's beyond the control of the petitioner and prevents her from attending court is an exceptional circumstance. If the board doesn't believe that, or if this court doesn't believe that her mother's recovery from childbirth in itself is an exceptional circumstance, this court can still find that the totality of the factors that she was just 13 years old at the time of her hearing, she demonstrated eligibility for relief. She did make diligent efforts to try to find counsel to change venue. And she did timely file her motion to reopen after she received her removal order. So the court can find that the circumstances here were exceptional. It does not have to remand the case to the
board. Can you give us a case where either we or another circuit has said that it finds, notwithstanding the BIA's contrary finding, that the circuit court finds exceptional circumstances? If you don't have one at the ready, you can address that at your rebuttal.
Thank you.
I mean, more common is that typically the Court of Appeals will remand to the BIA, right? We say, hey, you didn't consider the factors adequately. For example, you didn't take her age into a separate, you took it separately, that's not alone enough to be an exceptional circumstance, but it might be in the totality of the circumstances, and it doesn't appear you did it. I mean, that would be a thing we could tell them to examine on remand, right?
Yes, and there's few cases that address the very similar factors to this. In many of the cases, the board didn't make sufficient findings for the court to find that it demonstrated exceptional circumstances. In this case, the facts are not in dispute. The court can find that there were exceptional circumstances here. And in numerous unpublished decisions with very similar factors, the board has found exceptional circumstances. So the court could find that this meets that same threshold that the board has found in other unpublished decisions.
You keep saying could. I mean, we're trying to figure out what we should do. And I think your best argument is the facts are undisputed. And under these undisputed facts, there would be nothing for the BIA to really adjudicate, I guess, that upon the facts as presently presented as a matter of law, I think these are exceptional circumstances. Is that what you're arguing, basically?
Yes, I think the court has to find that the totality of the circumstances here were exceptional. The language of the statute is that if a serious illness of a parent prevents a petitioner from appearing in court, that's an exceptional circumstance. In this case, even more so, her parent was recovering from childbirth. She was a minor, just 13 years old. She would have had to travel across the country. She submitted evidence that she was abandoned by her father and seeking special immigrant juvenile status, and that she was diligently pursuing her case.
So how does this factor weigh in, the special immigrant juvenile status? She has apparently, after the BIA's decision, been granted that status, is that right?
Yes.
So what does that mean as a matter of practicality here, if you could explain that?
So her recent grant of special immigrant juvenile status was not before the board. So that's not something that this court can directly consider. However, the board was required to consider eligibility for relief as a positive factor weighing in favor of her demonstrating exceptional circumstances. And this is grounded in due process. If someone is more eligible for relief, it's more likely that they're going to appear in court. They're not filing their motion to reopen merely as a delay tactic. Here, she submitted evidence that she was eligible for special immigrant juvenile status. The board didn't engage with that evidence. The board didn't mention what the evidence was or why it was insufficient. The board merely just said it was insufficient, but doesn't explain why the evidence she presented didn't motivate her to appear in court or wouldn't have motivated her to appear in court.
Okay, but my question to you, and I understand that it's outside the record, but I'm just trying to understand what the law is. If she has been granted that status, hypothetically we'll say, but she in fact has, what does that mean for her and legally?
The government's position, and this is being litigated in other cases, is that she is still removable, although she's been granted special immigrant juvenile status. That's merely a petition that allows her to seek adjustment of status when a visa becomes available to her. So this petition is not moot because she's been granted special immigrant juvenile status. It's still crucial to her to have her proceedings reopened, to have a full hearing before an immigration judge to determine what eligibility for relief she may have, and what other actions the court could take in the meantime, since she is still removable. And so I'd just like to note that as further evidence that the board abused its discretion, the board has arbitrarily found in numerous cases that being a minor is a significant factor weighing in favor of reopening proceedings, even where there's no other compelling factors. Here, the board dismisses her age as not a per se exceptional circumstance, what she was arguing. She argued that it should have been factored into the totality of the circumstances here. And the board seems to disregard her age when it the board did disregard her age when it conducted its totality of the circumstances analysis, because it had already dismissed it as not a per se exceptional circumstance. And the board needs to, at a minimum, provide an explanation for why it's finding there were no exceptional circumstances here when it's found similar facts to present exceptional circumstances in the past. The petitioner did demonstrate exceptional circumstances caused her to miss her hearing. Her mother's recovery from childbirth was a serious illness in this situation that prevented her from appearing in court, and does warrant reopening proceedings. Even if the court finds that her mother's illness alone is not an exceptional circumstance, the totality of the circumstances were exceptional. The petitioner is a vulnerable 13-year-old girl who would have had to travel alone from New York to Tennessee. The board acted arbitrarily and abused its discretion by not reopening proceedings here. The board has reopened proceedings numerous times for less compelling circumstances, and this court should find that these circumstances were exceptional and proceedings should be reopened. And at a minimum, this court could remand the case to the board to correct its errors and adequately consider all the relevant factors in their totality.
Thank you. We'll give you your rebuttal time. Ms. Watson?
Yeah, please the court, Your Honor. Joanna Watson on behalf of the United States Attorney General. While this is a sympathetic case and it involves a child, the agency did not abuse its discretion, nor did they fail to address this claim under the totality of the circumstances. And the board addressed her age, and did so under the totality of the circumstances, because in addressing, they said that it's not per se, age is not per se an exceptional circumstance. And by doing that, if it was per se an exceptional circumstance, they could have stopped there, but they didn't. They addressed the age and they addressed the other claims, the birth of the mother's baby 10 days before. And in light of the fact that petitioner had previously filed a pro se motion to change venue and a pro se change of address that was granted by an immigration judge, negates the other factors.
Do we know? I don't think the petitioner, the 13-year-old, filed the motions. Probably the mother did. Do we know if the mother had assistance in filing those pro se motions?
I mean, she claimed she wasn't able to do it because she needed assistance, but it was a pro.
No. When she actually did file, you say that the mother on behalf of her daughter had filed motions before. Do we know that those motions were filed without assistance of legal services or somebody, or that she just did it on her own? Or do we not know that?
We don't know. What we do know is nobody had filed an appearance. Attorney hadn't filed an appearance in the case.
Yeah, I know, but we see pro se motions filed all the time, and we see them in prisons where you get the jailhouse lawyers that give the advice and this and that, and people. We see cases where there's somebody will consult with an attorney. The attorney won't enter an appearance, but will give advice and will kind of go through the forms with the person, and the attorney doesn't want to take the case and doesn't want to get on the record. But so we actually just don't know that. We have a history that she has gone to Catholic services. The mother has sought assistance throughout this case, And it was turned down in New York, I think. And that's one of the arguments they make, is that they went there and the Catholic Legal Services said, we're just too busy. We can't do it now. And so she said, we're out of luck here. I'm just saying, the fact that it was filed pro se at one point doesn't necessarily mean there was not some legal assistance. That's all.
I mean, this isn't somebody that wasn't unfamiliar with the situation. She went so far as, and speaking to the change of venue.
Well, we're also talking about the mother. It bothers me a little bit that we're trying. I know this is the way it works. The 13-year-old is bound by her mother's conduct.
Correct.
But it's still somewhat disturbing. The 13-year-old, you say, well, she should have traveled from New York to Memphis, I guess it was. Well, 13-year-olds can't drive a car, so she'd have to have somebody drive her. They say that she couldn't fly because she didn't have identification. I mean, is that correct? That you couldn't get on a plane without identification?
I can't say definitively. I know somebody who has lost identification was able to fly recently.
No, the TSA checks everybody's identification before you get onto a plane. I mean, somebody could hide. You wouldn't want to be advising that a 13-year-old should somehow try to escape TSA scrutiny, would you?
I'm not suggesting that. But ultimately, I mean, this falls out. Yes, it was 1,000 miles. It was... All their own doing. They had counsel representing them up until April.
Well, they didn't have counsel during this period, did they?
And they had counsel. The counsel in Tennessee did not withdraw until April due to a breakdown in communication.
When was this hearing that the 13-year-old missed?
The hearing was on June 6th that she missed.
Okay, it was June. All right. In June, she didn't have counsel.
Correct, but she had counsel.
I know, she tried to get counsel and wasn't able to get it. Now the mother, you know better than I do, but if you have a baby 10 days before, is that travel time? Or I wouldn't think that most mothers would travel that soon after giving birth, but are you saying that most mothers are able to do that, or
it depends. Like petitioner refers to the case where the board rescinded an in absentia order, which the woman had a cesarean section in that case.
Cesarean, you'd definitely be laid up for quite a while.
There's no indication that the birth was complicated or there are any issues. I would think that would be far from ideal from doing that, but in certain countries, people are back to.
All right. It's probably not advisable, I bet, but okay, to travel 1,000 miles.
But it comes down to the not changing the venue. I mean, she had several months and again, she knew she was pregnant at the time the hearing was scheduled. She knew at the end of January that the hearing was going to be in June. And she noted in February when she went to New York to the Catholic Charities with her daughter that she was pregnant.
That's why she sought help at Catholic Charities. And
very unfortunate.
And it was turned down, that's all. Okay.
This seems really unbelievable because we're not talking about the mom in her case. We're talking about a 13-year-old girl who has come from El Salvador, whose father has abandoned her, who is now theoretically, if this ruling in absentia remains, will be sent back to El Salvador through no fault. A 13-year-old cannot force her parent to let her travel to 1,000 miles to another state to appear at a hearing. A 13-year-old may not even understand legal proceedings at all. And it just seems to me that it's incredibly harsh. You even began your argument by saying these were sympathetic facts. It would seem to me that this is an abuse of discretion not to reopen this case under these circumstances.
Again, going back to, they had previously filed a motion to change venue. All they had to do was file another one back there, and they had counsel in January in Tennessee that remained until April, and due to that breakdown in communication, the counsel withdrew, but they had counsel there. They had moved at the end of January. The counsel was still noticed on the case.
But didn't the counsel in, I think it was the mother had moved, she and her daughter to Arkansas, right, to be with relatives. Then they moved back to New York.
Correct.
They had counsel from Arkansas help with the Tennessee, probably pro se, but I mean, they were getting legal advice down in Tennessee. And then they moved back. And at that point, I think that's when counsel from down in Tennessee or Arkansas moved to withdraw because the client had gone back to New York, right?
Yes, and said that due to a breakdown in communication as well, and he found out that they had moved. But if they had maintained contact, there's no reason why he wouldn't have been able to change the venue for them prior to withdrawing his counsel. I mean, it's an extremely unfortunate event, but the board, they didn't abuse their discretion. They looked at everything in the totality of the circumstances. And at the time, she had also abandoned her SIJ status, the petition that was filed in the Arkansas court. And
that was because
the board was correct. Pardon me?
Moved back to New York. That's why she abandoned it in Arkansas, right?
I'm assuming so. I mean, I can't say definitively, but looking at that, the board addressed that she had not shown eligibility for SIJ status, which one of the first requirements is to have a court order. And at that point, when she filed her motion, the only evidence that she showed was a hearing that was set for February that she didn't attend. There was no evidence presented except that she planned to in the future. I mean, that's not evidence of immediately available. And then to the fact that she now has an approved petition, the priority date is not current. So it could be 2, 3, possibly 5 years out before she'd be eligible to adjust status. And I mean, I will say that she could possibly go to DHS and ask for deferred action as a prosecutorial discretion standpoint. But I mean, it's unfortunate events, but the board didn't abuse its discretion. And it's not bound to follow unpublished decisions that are not factually the same as the situation. Like in the unpublished decision with the woman who had a cesarean section, she had actually sought reopening due to lack of notice before the immigration judge. So how the board came up, they gave an alternative exceptional circumstance. She hadn't even presented that to the immigration judge in the first place, which is one of the reasons why they're not bound to follow. It's, you know, a fact by fact basis under the totality of the circumstances.
What about the argument your opponent makes that the board committed some legal error in requiring that EA establish prima facie eligibility for any form of relief?
In regard to that, there could have been an error had the board said, you've shown an exceptional circumstance to rescind your in absentia order, but we're not going to reopen because you haven't shown prima facie eligibility. It's two different things. You have to have it rescinded first. And actually, once you get rescinded, you go back to where you started, to a hearing before the immigration judge. But essentially, it was harmless error for the when the board said that reopening wouldn't be necessary because you hadn't shown prima facie eligibility for relief, because it said that we're not going to rescind. You haven't shown an exceptional circumstance. That makes sense. You have to show an exceptional circumstance for rescission of the in absentia order. And if you don't show that, it's not going to get reopened. So their alternative finding really doesn't even need to be addressed.
Well, but they did address it, which it gives you the impression or inference that that was a factor in the board's decision to deny reopening.
Well, in regard to the rescission, I mean, in regard to exceptional circumstance, you look at the eligibility for relief. And again, as I previously stated, she had not shown eligibility for relief except for an abandoned petition for guardianship that was filed in Arkansas. Other than that, she hadn't started the process in New York. So the board wasn't incorrect when it said, looking at the totality of the circumstances for rescission of the in absentia order, that she hadn't shown eligibility for relief. And again, to the motion to reopen, I mean, if the board had said this is an exceptional circumstance, then it should just go back to the immigration judge to the start.
So if hypothetically this panel were to believe that exceptional circumstances had been shown, what would we do under to follow appropriate precedent? Would we overturn the board and say there are exceptional circumstances and remand, or would we remand to the board to apply the proper test to decide exceptional circumstances?
I mean, if you believe that the board didn't properly consider the totality of the circumstances, committed an error in not looking at the totality, then it would be a remand to reevaluate and address factors that it had not previously addressed.
Are there any cases where the Court of Appeals has actually held on its own that exceptional circumstances are satisfied and then remanded in light of the Court of Appeals saying that?
I cannot speak to that right at the moment. I'd be happy to do a 28J if I come up with anything.
Yeah, no, I think that would be, because I have asked that question to both sides, I think it would be helpful to me certainly to know with a 28J letter not to exceed 5 pages from each of you to be sent in 10 days to let us know whether there are cases going either way on that. And if not from our circuit, whether you can find them from other circuits would be helpful to know.
Okay, or other circuits. And 5 pages would...
Yeah, 5 pages is...
Okay, not a page...
not a word limit. No, I'll go with pages. It's so much easier.
Okay. Some feel you have to use all 5 pages either.
12-point font, 14-point font.
What you think... would be appropriate under the circumstances. And 28J letters are often single-spaced, I will confess. So that makes it really essentially 10 pages double-spaced.
Thank you. Okay, just to summarize that it is the position that the agency fully evaluated under the totality of circumstances and that there were not exceptional circumstances in this situation where she had counsel and she per se filed the motion to change venue and could have had that counsel that was representing her in Tennessee to file another change of venue motion, which really negates the not being able to travel 1,000 miles. All right. Thank you, Your Honors.
I guess my question is, I don't see what the board would do on remand to reevaluate circumstances. I think that they evaluated all the circumstances, but they came up with the conclusion that these were not exceptional circumstances. Whether that is a finding of fact or a conclusion of law, I think is important. I would think that you consider all the facts and you come to the ultimate conclusion, it's probably a conclusion of law that under these facts, that this comes out. Otherwise, you could have the same set of facts and you could have the BIA making different decisions that these same set of facts we hereby rule are not exceptional. Here, however, we rule that they are. It seems like it has to be an issue of law if the facts are not in dispute. So you might want to include that on the 28J letter too, because I'm concerned on that too. And if I think that this is a legal determination, I think we can make it on our court that these facts are not in dispute under these circumstances. This should be a legal determination and we can rule as a matter of law that these are exceptional circumstances and therefore we can remand with instructions that the BIA grant the petition to reopen as opposed to further consideration. So you might want to go that way as well, since I'm not quite sure whether the ultimate ruling is a finding of fact or a conclusion of law.
I will definitely include that, Your Honor. And in Jimenez, it talked about just the abuse of discretion because it goes to the court's review.
Well, if it's a legal determination, I don't know if you've got abuse of discretion here. Usually the ultimate finding to reopen is reviewed for abuse of discretion, but what constitutes exceptional circumstances, I think we need to have some legal framework there. So, okay.
I'll include that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, I think Ms. Nagar, you have 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Yes, I agree. The agency does have broad discretion to deny a motion to reopen, but they did not deny the motion here as a matter of discretion. They found that she did not meet the legal standard for exceptional circumstances. The legal standard for exceptional circumstances is circumstances such as the serious illness of a parent beyond the control of the alien. I'll note that just quickly for you that the motion to change venue that she first filed was filled out on a template form, and both the petitioner and her mother's affidavits in support of the motion to reopen state that they received pro se assistance from Catholic Charities in Arkansas to fill out that motion to change venue. Her mom's affidavit specifically said that she would not let her 13-year-old daughter go alone to Tennessee, and that she was unable to take her because she had just given birth and would have had to bring herself and her 10-day-old child to Tennessee. There's no evidence in the record that she abandoned the guardianship petition that had been filed in Arkansas. That's an argument that the government makes here, that the board does not include in its decision. The board's decision simply says there was insufficient, that her evidence of eligibility for relief was insufficient.
What about Ms. Watson's point that your client, there was a loss of communications between the Arkansas Catholic Charities and your client? Was that due to your client's fault? I mean, is that the implication?
All we know is that the motion to withdraw says that the council only agreed to represent her in Tennessee, that she moved to New York, that council was no longer working for the nonprofit that had agreed to represent her, and that there was a breakdown in communication. We don't know what that was. I don't think the attorney would be ethically able to put that into the motion to withdraw. So we don't know what communication she had with the attorney, although it does say that the attorney heard from the mother that she had moved to New York. And we do know that she did try to seek assistance multiple times in New York at a Catholic Charities, and also she went to a private attorney's office to try to seek assistance, and that her partner called the court in Memphis to try to change venue. So again, we're not asking the board here to sort of substitute its own judgment. I believe there is a legal standard for exceptional circumstances, and the board abused its discretion by finding that the totality of the circumstances here did not meet that legal threshold. And at a minimum, this court must remand the case for the board to consider all the factors in the totality.
Thank you both for your argument. The case will be submitted.
Thank you.